Then Dan bit his lip, for he saw that he had said too much. He had spoken incautiously, even if Joseph's silence could be depended upon. A poke in the ribs from Judah apprised him of the fact. Dan had only thought of explaining to the Ishmaelites why they had treated the boy so cruelly. Judah, however, was thinking of the sale, and the two points of view were hard to reconcile. They were being forced to cry down their merchandise in the ears of the purchaser. It went against all sense. It had never happened to the sons of Jacob, and they were exceedingly ashamed. Apparently, in this business of Joseph, they got out of one tight place only to fall into another. Judah undertook to rescue their business honor out of this pass. He said, Well, all honor to the truth. The measure of the punishment may have gone beyond the offense, and perhaps is misleading as to the worth of the chattel. But let that pass. We sons of the king of the flocks are somewhat harsh and hasty masters, stern, mayhap over-stern in anger against moral lapses, a little hard-handed and ruthless in our decisions. The misdeeds of this young scapegrace here, if taken singly, were not too considerable. Only the sum and the repetition of them gave us to think, and decided us on the sharpness of the punishment. Its very excess showeth how highly we valued the slave, and what care we took to preserve his worth, for his skill and understanding are remarkable. And as he now sits there with his sins purged by our severity, he is a valuable possession. All this I say and set down in the interest of truth, Judah concluded. Dan blushed not a little for his misplaced subtlety, yet rejoiced that Leah's son had been so clever in getting out of the trap. Croaked the old man, looking to and fro between Joseph and his brothers, shaking his head the while. A clever rogue, indeed, as you say. What is the young dog's name? He hath no name, replied Dan. What should his name be? He has had no name at all up to now, for we said already that he is a nobody's son, a bastard and wild shoot begot in the swamps. He hath no tribe. We simply whistle or shout to call him, or say, Come hither. Went the old man again. So, a bad stock and wild is this culprit of yours. Strange, strange. How surprising is the truth at times. It is against reason and politeness, and yet one wondereth. When we took him out of his prison, this rush-born rascal told us he could read written and write himself. Was he lying? Not quite that, answered Judah. We said already that he hath an understanding worthy of mention, and is of no common dexterity. He can keep a list and books about jugs of oil and bales of wool. If he said no more, he kept his tongue clear of false witness. May it be at all times avoided, responded the elder, for truth is God and King, and Neb-Mare is its name. One must bow before it, no matter what its sound. Can my lords and the lords of the swamp boy read and write? Asked he with narrowed eyes. We consider that a slave's business, answered Judah shortly. That it sometimes is, granted the old man. But also gods write the name of kings on trees, and great is Tot. Possibly he hath himself sharpened the rushes and instructed him. May the ibis-headed one not set down the jest against me. But true it is, all ranks of men are governed. Only the scribe is not, for he governeth himself and needeth not to drudge. There are countries where this child of the Calamus would be set over you and the sweat of your brows. For lo, I can imagine, and my imagination doth not entirely desert me if I choose to put the case in jest, that he were the lord, and you his slaves. See, he went on, I am a merchant, and a skilled one, believe me, for I have grown old in appraising things and the value of them, so that it is not easy to fool me when I have stuff between thumb and forefinger as to whether it be of worth, and whether the weave is coarse or fine, or of medium quality. All that I can tell between my fingers, and my old head, too, is bent askew with the old habit of testing, so that no one can sell me poor for good. See now, the youth is fine in grain and fibre, if also worn from hard usage. I put my head on one side, and rub my fingers, and I can tell. I speak not of his skill, his understanding and dexterity in writing, but of the stuff and the texture, and there I am a judge. Therefore I make bold to jest and say, my reason would not stand still were I to hear that the come hither was the master and you his servants. But ye tell me truly, it is the other way round. Of a certainty, replied the brethren, and stiffened their backs again. The old man was silent. Well, he said after a while, and again he narrowed his eyes, since he is your slave, sell me the boy. In this way he put them to the test. Something in the affair was dark to him, and he made the offer suddenly and at random, slyly curious as to its effect. Take him as a gift, murmured Judah mechanically. And when the Midianite had shown that his head and heart were receptive to the flourish of speech, the other went on, though it is against fairness that we should have had trouble with the boy, and having purged him from moral offense, should give you to inherit the fruit of our discipline. But since you have a mind to him, then make your offer. Do you, on the contrary, make your own price, said the old man, for not otherwise will I consider it. And now began the bargaining and the haggling over Joseph, and persisted unabated 5 hours long, until sunset and late in the day. 30 silver pieces Judah demanded in the name of the brethren. The Menean replied that he must be jesting. One might smile at the joke, but naught else would come of it. Was he to pay in moon metal for a mere son of the swamps and nameless come hither, who, on their own evidence, suffered from great moral weakness? This was the retort upon Dan's overzealous crying down of the merchandise by justifying the severity of the penance. The old man made full use of the blunder to cheapen the price. But he too had made a mistake in rubbing his fingers and boasting of his knowledge of quality, for thus he committed himself to his high valuation of the goods by texture and weave, and that was to the advantage of the sellers. Judah took him at his word, and on his honor as a judge of quality, crying up the lad's superior fineness as though he and his had never cherished the smallest ill will against it, nor on account of it had thrown the object of their competition into the well. In the heat of the bargaining, they forgot all shame. Yes, Judah did not hesitate to say that a youth so fine that he could be master of them all, and they his slaves, should not be flung away under 30 pieces of silver. He behaved as though he were quite infatuated with the article of sale, saying that 25 silver pieces was the very lowest sum, with which he went over and kissed the mute and blinking Joseph on the cheek, and exclaimed that not even for 50 shekels could he or would he part with such a treasure of cleverness and charm. But the old man did not let himself be led away in such wise, and his position was the stronger, seeing that he was fairly sure that the brothers were bent on being rid of the boy at any price. It was easy to find this out by feigning to break off the chaffering. 15 silver shekels, namely according to the lighter Babylonian weight, were what he had offered. But when the brethren, by urging upon him his own words, had made him go up to 20 Phoenician shekels, he stopped there and would not be screwed up any further. It was in his power to say that he had found the boy in utter danger of death, and to assert a finder's right to ransom money, so that he was showing very high business standards in not subtracting anything from the purchase price, but rather in being prepared to pay the good round sum of 20 shekels Phoenician. If that were not worth their while, then he would withdraw the offer, and would hear no more talk about this lad of the swamps who could wield the reed. So the bargain was struck. 20 silver pieces, weighed out according to custom. The brethren slew a lamb of the flock beneath the trees in honor of the guests, let the blood run out, and fanned their fire to roast the flesh, that they might lift their hands and eat together in confirmation, and to celebrate the bargain. Joseph, too, received a piece from his new master, the Menean, and as he ate, he saw how the brethren took occasion privily to take the tattered festal garment and stain it all over in the blood of the sacrifice. Before his eyes and unashamed they had done this, confiding in his silence. And he ate of the lamb whose blood was to stand for his own. The meal and the strengthening were in place, for the chaffering was very far from being finished. The large lines had been laid down when the price was fixed, but now began, so to speak, the retail trading, namely, the laying out of the sum in goods. For we need not think, no matter how often we have heard it, that the brothers, when they sold Joseph, received this price from the Ishmaelites in ringing coin paid out of the bag into their hands. The old man never dreamed of paying in silver, to say nothing of currency. He had his own reasons. For who carries such a weight of metal about with him on journeys? Moreover, what buyer would not prefer to liquidate his debt in articles of value, since thereby he assumes the part of the seller, and every article thus sold becomes itself an opportunity for profit? 1.5 shekels of silver, in silver pieces, the Menean weighed out to the shepherds on the delicate scale he carried at his girdle. The rest of the sum would be made up by the merchandise in his packs. They unloaded the camels and spread out their wares in the grass, incense and fine fractured gums from beyond the river, and all sorts of other delightful and useful objects, razors and knives of copper and flint, lamps, ointment spoons, canes with inlaid work, blue glass beads, oil of resin, and sandals. A whole bazaar of notions that lay before the buyer's covetous eyes. Up to the sum of 18.5 silver pieces, they might pocket what they chose for their own. Each object now began to be haggled over, as though it were an end in itself. The evening came on, long before they got to the end, and Joseph had been sold for a little silver, a great many knives, bits of scented gum, lamps, and walking sticks. Then the Ishmaelites packed up again and made their adieu. They had taken time for the deal, sparing not the hours, so now they must make time spatially fruitful again, and had in mind to travel another stretch in the night before they encamped. The brothers did not urge them to stop, but they advised them concerning their journey and the roads to take. Above all, they said, avoid going inland or along the watershed to Hebron. It is inadvisable. Let our friends be warned. The roads are rough, the animals will stumble, and vagabonds are lurking everywhere. Go farther along the plain, and turn into the road that leads down through the hills along the foot of the orchards to the borders of the country. Thus you will be safe, and can ride always on the pleasant sea sand, 7 times 17 days, or as far as you like. It is a pleasure to travel by the sea, one never tires of it, and it is on all accounts most sensible. The merchants promised as they took their leave. The camels got up beneath them, and Joseph, the bartered slave, was mounted with Kedma, the old man's son. His eyelids drooped as they had done the whole time, even when he ate of the lamb, and the brothers, too, stood with downcast eyes as the train disappeared in the quickly falling twilight. Then they took a long breath and breathed it out again. Now he is gone, and is no more. Reuben comes to the pit. But in the falling dusk, and in the whispering evening that drew on, lighted by great stars, Reuben, Leah's son, was driving his laden ass from Dothan along sequestered paths toward the grave of Joseph, that he might fulfill the plans he had made the night before, in anguish and in love. In his broad, powerful breast, his heart throbbed strongly, For though he was big, he was soft and excitable, and he feared the brethren that they might seek him and prevent the work of rescue, which was to be likewise the instrument of his atonement and reinstatement. His muscular face was pale in the darkness, and his great legs, like columns in their bands, trod the ground noiselessly. He spoke no word to his ass, but grimly prodded the phlegmatic beast in the flesh of its rump to make it get on. One thing Reuben feared above all, that the stillness of death might prevail in the well when he came up and softly called his brother's name. That Joseph might not have kept soul and body together, but be gone beyond reach, and all preparations be vain, including the ladder which the rope-makers of Dothan had made under his eye. For Reuben had, after much thought, decided on the ladder. It would do for various contingencies. Joseph could climb up on it if his strength held out, or if it did not, he might seat himself between the treads and be drawn up to the daylight by Reuben's muscular arms, which had once enfolded Bilhah, and would surely be strong enough to draw up Jacob's lamb out of the depths. He had a coat to cover Jacob's nakedness, and food for 5 days hung from the animal's flanks. For 5 days' time would be needed for the flight from his brothers, whom Reuben would thus betray and bring to grief. He bowed his head and owned as much to himself as he stole by night to the grave. This much evil Big Reuben would do in order to do good. For that it was good and necessary to save Joseph, of that he had no doubts at all. And if the good and the evil mingled in his deed, it could not be helped. Life was like that. But Reuben also had faith that he could turn evil into good. Once he had put himself right with the father, and was again the firstborn son, he could hope to rescue the brethren too, and hack a way for them out of their impasse. His word would avail much, and he would give it on their side in asking all to share the guilt, including even the father himself, that there might come a great insight and mutual pardon, and righteousness might prevail forever. Thus Reuben sought to still his throbbing heart, and to console himself for his mixed motives, which were turbid and involved, like everything in life. But now he had come to the slope and the wall, where he stopped to see that he was not being watched. Then he took rope and coat, and descended on tiptoe to the broken steps, and penetrated through the fig tree scrub into the well chamber. The stars shone down on the broken flags, but there was no moon, and Reuben walked warily, drawing a deep breath as he went down, for his excitement had winded him, and he needed breath for the call he was to cry down into the depths. "Joseph, art thou alive?" With what a passionate joy would he hear the answer, with what heart-sinking the lack of it. And then the call died unuttered, or changed into a hoarse cry of fear, for he was not alone down here. Someone was sitting there in the starlight. How could that be? Someone sat there beside the well, and it was uncovered. The two halves of the lid lay one on top of the other on the flags, and the figure sat on them in a short mantle, leaning on his staff, and looked at Reuben sleepily, saying not a word. Big Reuben's legs felt shaky from his stumbling. He was so dazed that for a moment he thought he saw Joseph before him, Joseph who had died, and now a spirit sat beside his tomb. But this unlovable presence was not at all like Rachel's son. Even Joseph's ghost would surely not have been so uncommon tall, nor would he have had such a thick neck and little head on top. But then why was the stone rolled away from the well? Reuben was utterly puzzled. He stammered, Who art thou? "One of many," coolly answered the seated figure. He raised his chin and well-shaped mouth, so that they looked particularly plastic. "I am nothing startling, be not afraid. But whom seekest thou?"
"Whom I seek," repeated Reuben, put out by the unexpected encounter. "First of all, I will hear what thou dost in this place."
"Oh, so thou wouldst know that. I am the last to imagine that there is anything here to seek. I am set to guard this well. Therefore I sit here and watch. If thou imaginest that I have particular pleasure, or sit here for the fun of the thing, then thou mistakest. I act according to duty, and to carry out orders. It easeth many a vexed question to do so.